Krishna favorably,
and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Well, this is the prime goal of the Krishna consciousness movement, to bring its members to the platform of pure devotional service, Bhaktir Uttama. Uttama means topmost. There are other organizations that are encouraging people to have some God consciousness, to ask God for different things, praying to God to give us daily bread and other things. This is better than denying the existence of God, but it is not sufficient to go back to the spiritual world, because as long as one is still attached to enjoying anything in the material world, then he's not accepted. It's a special transcendental place where only those are admitted who have pure, unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Here in this world, there are many different types of clubs, organizations, secret organizations. To become a member, you have to go through certain rituals and things, then you can be enlightened into the secrets. Not for everyone. Well, that's, we can see there's something there, like what Krishna's arranged. That's why it's attractive. They want to get some secret knowledge, some special privileges that no one else gets. It's like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that because bhaktosi me sakache ti rahasyam hi tarutumam. Rahasyam means the most secret. Rahasya hi tarutumam. And Krishna says, I will reveal to you, my dear Arjuna, this secret. Why? Because you are my devotee as well as my friend. Well, this, even the secret societies have their origin in Krishna. Krishna is the originator of the biggest secret society. Everyone's looking for something enjoyable, some just gross materialist. They're not looking for God or anything mystical. But even in their own way, they take material things to be very enjoyable and divine. So the conclusion is everyone's looking for the ultimate experience. Whether it's if you go to the speedway, they want to drive, how many miles per hour are they driving now? 200, 300 miles per hour. They want to get a very exhilarating experience. It's very adventurous, because at any moment they may die, but it's very exciting. And they know if they win, they're going to get lots of money and praise and so many things. So we're looking for something wonderful. Krishna says, I'm adventure. I'm the dearmost friend, the most attractive person, the most secret of all secrets, the origin of all knowledge. He's the origin of all the universes. We're looking for that person. But We're looking for that experience, that rasa, that fulfills us completely. But if we want to get it, then we have to be willing to become the unalloyed servant of Krishna. Now, in the material world, others, they demand that. They promise, if you become my servant or my slave, I will satisfy you. Many people make this claim. Work under my direction, I'll satisfy you. However, none of them are able to fulfill their promises. Whereas Krishna, when someone becomes a servant of Krishna, then Krishna is not a bad master. He doesn't exploit. Rather, he maintains and gives complete shelter. In the material world, there's always some perversion. Someone wants to exploit another person or another group for his own material desires. But Krishna doesn't do that. Krishna treats his servants with great respect. We see, for example, when Krishna was present on this planet, how he dealt with his wives. He married 16,000 wives. First of all, he married Rukmini, and then Satyabhama, and Jambavati. He married 8 wives individually, and in each case, he took them in a heroic way, either by fighting or by winning a contest, Swayambhara. And then after that, he had 8 wives, but then there was one demon. His name was Bhaumasura, also known as Narakasura. So this Bhaumasura had captured 16,100 princesses. He was so powerful that he went to the kings and he just took their daughters, took all the princesses. And he was keeping them for his own purposes, captured. And these poor princesses, there's nothing they could do, and the kings were not powerful enough to defeat him, but he was just terrorizing. Well, this news came to Krishna, and so Krishna went there and he fought with Bhaumasura and he killed him. And then he went to the princesses, he let them all free, he said, "Now, my dear girls, my dear princesses, you're all free. You can go home to your kingdoms." And they said, "Well, what can we do? We can't go." And he said, "Why?" And they said, "Because we've been here so long. Who will marry us now? And we've been away from home. We've been in the place of another man. No one will marry us. So we can't go home." So Krishna said, "What do you want?" And all the girls, all the princesses, in unison, they all said, "We want you to marry us. We want you to be our husband." Now, most men would be in a great predicament if that were to happen to them. Because how would they would immediately think, "What am I going to do with 16,100 princesses? Where am I going to put them all? How am I going to satisfy them all? Even if I see one a day, or even if I dedicate one day and night to each princess, the next one will have to wait, how many years? 15? 16,000? No, 50. 50 years? So it'll be very difficult. I probably won't be able to maintain them. They'll probably become discouraged for lack of association and affection." But Krishna didn't have that problem. He said, "All right, come on." And he took all of them back to Dwaraka. And he sent word that he wanted 16,100 palaces constructed for them. So Vishvakarma, you know, he's the demigod in charge of architecture, the designer. So he had Vishvakarma design 16,100 palaces. He gave each of his wives a palace. But that's already an accomplishment that no one else could do. First of all, how many men do you know that 16,100 princesses would want to marry? Knowing that if I choose him, and all these other girls are choosing him, then I'm going to be a co-wife with 16,000. That's not very desirable. Even the most handsome man, a woman would think twice, well, but can he maintain me, and what about all these co-wives? But they didn't even consider that. They knew that they were already getting so much ecstasy from thinking of Krishna, because while they were in the prison, they were absorbed in thinking of Krishna. They were always thinking of Krishna. So, finally, they got the chance. And Krishna gave them the palaces. But then more than that, he expanded himself into 16,000 forms, so that he remained with each princess. Now they're queens, so he remained with each queen all the time. And each queen thought, oh, this is so nice. Krishna is only caring about me. He's not so much interested in the other queens, but he's interested in me. You might say, well, that's an illusion. It's not actually true because Krishna was with all of them. But this is yoga maya. Krishna can arrange things in such a way. Now you might say it's cheating. He cheated the poor girls that they were thinking that he was with them only. But Krishna can do that. He can also be with them exclusively and not with others. And at the same time, he can be with all of them. This is the nature of the Supreme Master, the Supreme Mystic. You cannot say it's not possible because he has mystic powers. He can be simultaneously one place and he can simultaneously be everywhere else. Only Krishna can do that. That's what makes him unique. We cannot do that. If I'm one place, let's say I'm in Kansas City, then I cannot be somewhere else. But Krishna can do that. He can simultaneously be in many places. This is a mystic perfection. The mystic yogis can expand themselves into eight forms, up to eight forms. But their mystic expansion, they have to do the same things. It's like a television expansion. If one form is doing something, then the other forms are all doing that, like several televisions, same channel. But Krishna, he has better mystic power. He can expand himself into unlimited forms, and each form can do separate things. So this is why Krishna is the best master. Everyone's looking for a good master, someone who will take care of them, protect them. Isn't it? Why are we happy? Because we're living in America. Because we're protected. We're thinking we have good army. We have good social system. If I have any difficulties, I can get some social security. I have a good army here, a good police force, fire department. It's a good country because I'm protected. I'm given shelter. But ultimately, what can America do if someone gets a heart attack? They can bring in the best doctors, but no one can save. Whereas if one takes shelter of Krishna, then there's no such thing as any misfortune. It's just one exciting episode after another. It's like we all have experience when we were little children and Father said, okay, now let's go, we're going camping, so we go camping. It's a nice experience. Then we're going here. Wherever we go with the Father is very enjoyable for the children. It's one exciting episode. A crude example, but to get some idea. Krishna is the supreme protector, the supreme enjoyer, the supreme husband. Everyone should take shelter of Krishna and be completely satisfied. And there'll be no exploitation. That's my point. In the material world, if someone claims, come and be my beloved, or I will take care of you, there's always some exploitation for their personal desires. And ultimately, they cannot give us something beneficial for us even. Because how can they? They themselves are controlled by the material nature. They're under the grip of Maya. They're in illusion. Why should anyone serve such a person? Rukmini Devi, she explained this when she was speaking to her husband Krishna. She said, I cannot understand why any woman would agree to serve a husband that's made of simply some skin and inside a bag of skin, and inside is some blood and stool and urine, and the outside is decorated with mustaches and hairs, bodily hairs. Why would any woman agree to serve such a husband? She said, I'm only going to accept you as my husband, no one else. Krishna's form is Satchidananda Vigraha. So we should give up this idea of being the body. Because on the bodily conception of life, one is thinking, I'm man, I'm woman, I'm American, I'm Indian, young and old. And therefore, everything we do is based on that misconception. All of our thoughts center around, just like if someone thinks, oh, I'm a young lady, then she looks at all the magazines on glamour magazines, how to look beautiful to attract a male. But if she's not that body, then what is the need for that? Why is she spending so much time trying to attract a different person to her body if she's not that body? If she understands, I am the spirit soul, I'm the servant of Krishna, then everything that she reads should be how to glorify Krishna, how to make my supreme master satisfied. Now in the material world, generally everyone wants to be the master. Although we may say that I'll be your servant, in reality what we really mean is I'll pretend that I'm your servant and I'll be your master. I'll pretend that I'm going to render you pleasure, but really I'm using you for my pleasure, isn't it? Yesterday we were driving and so we saw one newlywed couple. They had just gotten married. So both of them are happy. Why are they happy? Because the man is thinking, now I will be able to increase my sense enjoyment. And the woman is also thinking, I'll be able to increase my sense enjoyment. Both are thinking the same thing. And that's the motivation. All the relationships in this world are based on that. Someone asked, why, if Krishna is self-sufficient, he's satisfied by himself, why would he need to have so many other living entities? So we asked him, well, why did you get married? You got married because you're already living alone, happily, but you wanted to expand your pleasure with another living entity to enjoy. And then why do you have children? To expand more. And this is the desire of the living entities. Similarly, it comes from Krishna. He wants to enjoy relationships with so many living entities, therefore they're his parts and parcels. And he has a unique relationship with each one, just as he gave each of those queens 16,000 palaces, and he related with each one individually. Similarly, he will relate with every devotee. Every devotee will feel completely satisfied in the relationship with Krishna, because he's Yogeshwara. He can satisfy all the desires of the living entities. And there won't be any exploitation, because what does he need to exploit us for? He's already Atma Rama. He's completely self-satisfied. Sometimes Krishna is criticized for stealing the garments of the unmarried gopis, that this was unfair treatment. But they don't understand. It wasn't that Krishna was trying to get some material pleasure, but rather these girls had prayed to Goddess Katyayani earlier that they wanted Krishna as their husband. It was their desire. They were praying, please, our dear Goddess Katyayani, because Goddess Katyayani is a form of Durga. Well, they were young girls. They were taught that if you want to get a good husband, you pray to Durga and she'll give you a good husband. So they did that. They prayed to Durga, please give us a good husband, Krishna. We don't want any other husband. So Krishna arranged to become their husbands, at least in one sense, because they were already, their parents didn't agree with their choice, so they, some of them were, well, these girls were unmarried, but so in essence, by accepting them in that way, Krishna accepted them as his wives, and they were completely satisfied. Krishna can't be criticized for any of his activities, because if one understands the reason behind it, even, for example, when he, you may criticize that he killed Kamsa. But look at the background. Who was Kamsa? What had he done? What had he done? What kind of a person? He had committed so many atrocities, killed so many children. Such a terrorist. Though Krishna's killing him was quite appropriate, if you know the background. The Battle of Kurukshetra. You may say Krishna was, he was a warmonger. Arjuna wanted to be nonviolent, but Krishna incited him to fight. Yes, Krishna incited him to fight for the proper reason, for dharma. Krishna never acts outside of dharma. Sometimes he's accused of acting outside of dharma. But if you look more carefully, you'll see that everything he does is perfect dharma. Because how could it not be? Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. He is the creator of dharma. He is the propounder of all religious principles. Whatever he says becomes the religious principle. You can't say that he acted against immoral. How can he act immorally? Morality comes from him. That doesn't mean that everything that Krishna does that we should try to do. Krishna danced with so many gopis. We cannot do that. If we try to do that, we become immoral. But Krishna doesn't become immoral, because he is actually the supreme enjoyer, the supreme husband, Paramparusha. People should get to know about Krishna. Unfortunately, the world is in ignorance. Most of the people, they don't know who is Krishna. I was reading that they're going to have, someone's organizing a big world day of prayer to God. But they're praying to God, but do they know who God is? It helps. If you're going to have a big prayer, you need to know who you're praying to. So if you ask anyone, can you describe God? You'll get so many different answers. Someone will say, you know, he's light. Someone will say he's love. Someone will say he has no form. Someone will say he's everything. But we know who God is. He's Sri Krishna. And you may say, well, that's your sectarian view. All right. If you don't accept that Krishna is God, then you show us or present to us someone who's greater than Krishna. Krishna is historical. He came here to this world and he displayed. That's why we accept him. So you have to show us someone who is more powerful than Krishna, more beautiful than Krishna, more wealthy. Bhagavan, these are the six qualifications of being God. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagya yaschaiva shanam kalitingana. Who will you show us who's superior? Muhammad, he doesn't claim to be God, he claims to just be a servant. Jesus doesn't claim to be God, he claims to be the Son. So who will you present? Where is this person who's greater than Krishna, Asamurva? And they say, well, it's just fictitious. They just made up this person that's so perfect. You know, obviously no one could be greater than him because it's all concocted. Didn't really happen. But Vyasadeva has recorded all these events, and Gargamuni has also recorded them. So that's another. We're working on the Garga Samhita, which is very good because it gives another proof, another evidence from a different personality. Gargamuni, he was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, and his eyewitness account. He was the one who gave Krishna his name. Not originally, but when he came to this earth and he performed the different sacrifices. Now you may say, well, we don't accept Gargamuni, we don't accept Vyasadeva, we don't accept anyone. All right, well then what can be done? If you don't accept, it's like if someone comes into the court with law books and he says, here, it says here in this law book, and then someone says, I don't accept your law book. But these are the authorized law books by the government. The authorized historical books. So similarly, the Vedas are the oldest authoritative scriptures. There's nothing older. The Dead Sea Scrolls are something like 4,000 years old, but the Vedas are over 5,000 years old. And they're supported by all the oral records that before that, the tradition linked with the Ramayana. Ramayana goes back 2 million years when Valmiki Muni, he compiled the Ramayana, that is the story of Lord Ramachandra. So we have the oldest tradition. And not just the oldest, that doesn't make it perfect just because something's old. But it's not only old, but it's also accurate. No one can find anything inaccurate about the Vedas. The Vedas say, for example, that cow dung is pure. In another place in the Vedas, it says if one touches the stool of an animal, he becomes contaminated, he has to take a bath. So someone may say, this is a contradiction. One place it says, if you touch the animal's stool, you have to take a bath. Another place it says, if you touch cow dung, you get purified. Aha, it's a fault. But no, cow dung is unique. It's the only one. There's no other stool that's purifying. You can't say, well, if the cow dung is... cow's stool is pure. Imagine how much purer a Brahmin's stool is. I'll take some Brahmin's stool and I'll use it. No. Brahman stool is impure, but the cow dung is pure. We have to accept the Vedas as it is, without any doubts, because everything is perfectly aligned. So we have a little time now. If there's any questions, we'll try to answer. Microphone. Because we have some of the devotees are in the kitchen, so they can hear.
You were mentioning about show me, if Krishna's not God, show me someone who is God or besides Krishna, or someone who is greater than Krishna or God. So it seems like maybe we could also preach like there's 72 verses in the second chapter of the Gita Upanishad stating the essence and knowledge of the soul. So it seems that we could show people that and say, well, this is what a soul is. And some of those people being nonsensical could say, well, I don't accept this. This is, so we could say that, well, if you don't accept our version of the 72 verses describing the soul, why don't you support a better one, could we, it seem like you do the same thing,
Well, in every field, in the field of philosophy, Krishna's words, who's come up with a better succinct 700 verses than Bhagavad Gita to explain reality, to explain the soul? Yes, where is there another description that surpasses it? Everyone has to use the Bhagavad Gita to get support for their own philosophies. And that's why you see many people, they take Bhagavad Gita and they write a commentary in Bhagavad Gita, and then they write their own philosophy in the commentary, because they have to use something to get some support, the popularity of Bhagavad Gita. Okay, we'll go around. Everyone can ask a question. Who's next?
I'm from America, and I never heard of the Bhagavad Gita, and I like the Bible. I mean, that's the word of God, and okay. I believe in Jesus, and I'm a good person. And
okay, that's very good. Now, you believe in Jesus and believe in the Bible. All right. Do you believe in the part where it says, where God says, don't offer me any more of these burnt offerings, these dead animals? I find them abominable. I don't want them. Do you believe the part where Jesus says, thou shalt not kill? It's also in the Old Testament. Because if you actually believe, then you have to accept these parts too. You can't just remove parts that...
I don't do that. I don't kill any animals. And I don't do any sacrifice. So I'm okay.
You don't kill, but you don't kill, but you buy the food and you hire someone else to do the killing. So you're also guilty. Just like if you go to the court and they say, so we have evidence that you hired this person to kill this person, and you say, I didn't touch him, I didn't. Yeah, but you gave the money. So you're giving the money. You're hiring the hit person. You're still guilty. You cannot. There's seven conspirators, according to the Vedic. One who raises the animal for slaughter, one who gives permission, one who kills, transports, one who cooks it, one who serves it, one who eats it. They're all...
But I just read the Bible, and it does say that. It just says, thou shalt not kill. I'm not killing anybody. Anyway, you're following your program. I respect that. I think you're... very good person. So.
Yes. Well, we would like to help you also become closer to God. Now, you may think, why are we trying so hard to help others? Why don't we just care about ourselves? But Krishna says, "Ya idam paramam guyam mad bhakte shavidhashute." Krishna likes it when we try to give this knowledge to others. Now, it's not always appreciated. Sometimes people will become disturbed. But that disturbance is actually kindness. For example, a doctor When a doctor is treating a patient, he says, you have a serious problem that needs to be treated. So the person feels disturbed. Why are you telling me I have some disease? And then the doctor says, now I have to do some operation. They don't like it. But it's actually for the person's best interest. It's to help them. Similarly, the Krishna devotees are given the thankless task sometimes of trying to give this transcendental knowledge to others. Other question?
Anyway, I like coming here anyway.
Thank you. This lady?
Hello. I had a question about the Queens of Dwarka. Basically, it's a pretty simple question, I guess. I was told that Satyabhama is an incarnation of Bhudevi, but I also got the impression that Rupa Goswami's position is that she's a direct expansion of Radha. So I'm wondering, is Bhudevi also an expansion of Radha? And where is the expanding coming from? Basically, that's my question.
Yes, Radharani is the original, and from Radharani comes Lakshmi. Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrama Sevimana, and the gopis are also expansions, and Bhudevi is an expansion, and even Rukmini is an expansion. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Srila Sanatana Goswami is describing a very intimate section where Krishna is in Dwarka and he's disappointed. He's feeling sorry. And so his queens are asking, you know, what's wrong? And he says, I'm missing Vrindavan. I'm missing Srimati Rani. The only reason I'm attracted to you all is because you look like Radharani. You remind me of Radharani. Otherwise, I have no attraction to be here. So, yes, they're all coming from Radharani. Someone else who hasn't asked a question? Okay, here.
Can you explain the difference between mind and consciousness?
Consciousness includes the mind. The consciousness is the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So mind is one aspect of consciousness. But that's on the material level. But consciousness is also there for the soul. It's a symptom of the soul to be conscious. To be aware. Consciousness means to be aware of one's self-identification. So it's like ego. To be, I think, therefore I am, just like one philosopher said. That's an idea. Because I'm existing, because I have consciousness, therefore I have an identity. I'm unique personality. And the consciousness must be related to myself. Of course, the impersonalists, their idea is that when you become self-realized, you merge into the supreme consciousness and you give up your individuality. But Krishna says that never happens. No one ever gives up individual consciousness. They always remain an individual. But one of the features in the material world of consciousness is the mind, this subtle use of it. The mind's activities are thinking, feeling, and willing. So the soul is the real person. But then just below the soul is the false ego or the identification as an individual. Then below that is the intelligence, and then mind, and then the And then the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So it's a mechanism. It's a facility for carrying out one's desires in the material world. Now in the spiritual world, they don't have material minds, but everything is there spiritually. It's like we have material bodies here. In the spiritual world, they have bodies, but they're not material. They're spiritual. So similarly, in the spiritual world, there's the equivalent of spiritual mind. Okay? Yes. Tara.
I'm wondering, as a mother, it takes away a lot of time for, I guess, kind of like devotional service, because you're taking care of a child 24 hours a day. And if, how does one maintain a family in their spiritual life, I guess?
Well, one has to change the consciousness. One has to consider that, what am I doing 24 hours a day? I'm putting in a lot of time and energy here. What's going to be the fruit? Just like a gardener or a farmer, he goes out and he does a lot of work. First he clears the field, then he has to take all the weeds out, then he has to go through, then he puts in some, you know, cow dung, makes it nice, then he goes through, makes a trough, trough. Makes a trough, then he goes through and puts the seeds in, then he covers the seeds, and then he has to water and protect it, make sure that the predators don't come, no one comes and eats. Because when the little plant comes up, it's very tasty for animals to come and eat it. He has to protect, and then he has to make sure there's water. He has to water it. Sometimes, what if there's drought, then he has to find some irrigation program. He's working hard for months. But he knows what's going to happen. That little seed is going to grow, and it's going to come up, and then it's going to become some nice food, and there'll be some harvest. Or you could even say, there's another example, someone who grows pomegranates. Pomegranate tree takes a long time to produce fruit. It doesn't happen even in a year. It takes many years. So imagine someone's maintaining this tree for so many years. He's thinking that when the pomegranates will come. So we have to be patient. Utsaham nischaya dharya tat tat karma pavartana. Dharya means patience. So in raising a child, it's a very good lesson in patience. You have to serve, do so much work patiently. But we should also know that even the activity itself, even if the fruit doesn't come, we can't be attached to the fruits, but just the act itself of raising a child in Krishna consciousness is devotional service. It's not like we have to do, now I'm doing this, and then later on I'll do that when I finally get, when things get better, I'll be able to do something else. No, everything that we do should be devotional service now. Not that in the future I'll perform devotional service. Therefore, that's why when raising a child, it has to be fully Krishna conscious. We were speaking to a family in Omaha last night, and so they were asking about how to make spiritual advancement. So we were telling them about chanting 16 rounds, and they were a little intimidated. How am I going to do it? I have a child and this and that. But use the child, train the child also in the chanting. Child may not be able to chant yet, but the child can appreciate the chanting. Don't be afraid to teach the child and to expose the child to chanting. put the child into play. Okay, now we're going to chant japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Child will like that. What a wonderful vibration. Child likes to be with the mother. So as a mother, you just, you know, you hold the child with one hand, you chant with the other hand. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Don't think that that's not a good engagement for your child to hear the chanting. Just like when we get new devotees here. So, we don't always have all of our departments filled with department heads, so sometimes there's a little shortage. There's not someone to take specific care of the new devotees, for example. So I have a program, when they get up, I have them come up to my office, I'm doing my writing, and they have them chant there. They just sit in my office and chant. So I'm not interrupted, I'm doing my service, but they're also doing their service, but they're getting association. So the combination is nice. Because if I just left them on their own, they might, as they say, space out, you know. That's a term that we use sometimes. Their minds may, because after all, they're not trained. But if they come up and they sit there and they're chanting, then their mind's focused, they're in association. So I get my work done, they get their work done, and we both make advancement by association. So your child is sent to you to become a devotee. Krishna brought the child there to become trained, and your duty is to train. It happens to be a long training program, but the effect is very good because you're starting them from such a young age. It's easier. The students we get, they're coming to us at the age of 18 and over, some way over 18. They already have so many bad habits. It's difficult to undo the bad habits, but a child comes starting fresh again. So it's a good opportunity to train them all good habits from the beginning. And then you'll get, it's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was praying to Krishna, please send me a ray of Vishnu. Send me a son that will be able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So he got Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Special gift. It's a lot of work, but the results are also very wonderful if one takes it seriously. It's devotional service, it's not material. Because we're not just raising any child, and we're not just giving them ordinary material things. We're teaching them everything to do with Krishna. How to remember Krishna at every moment. It's a great science, and it's a good opportunity for a mother to always remain Krishna conscious, because she has to set a good example. Because whatever the child sees, don't think the child doesn't understand or child won't understand what I'm doing. No, they seem to pick up. They seem to understand. They learn. What is it? Someone made a statement. Give me a child from some young age for a period of time. I've got them for life. Let me train them during this young period. So what they get in the very beginning, because they learn everything. How do they learn to speak so young? Because they're so attentive. How does a child learn to speak? Because it listens very carefully, picks up the accent. Wants to please. Child wants to please. That's why do the educational systems, why do they train young children from 5 years? Why don't they bring me all the 75-year-olds? Well, they don't want them because they can't learn. It's difficult to learn at 75. But at 5, they're very eager to learn everything. Okay, write like this, say like this. They just drink, they're like a dry sponge. They'll accept everything you tell them. So make sure you tell them everything right. And make sure you behave everything right. Because they watch everything. They observe, they hear everything. They'll eat whatever you give them. If you give them ordinary food, they'll eat it. If you give them prasadam, they'll eat that. And the difference will be seen. If you give them only prasadam, they'll grow up, they'll be devotees. If you give them ordinary food, then they get contaminated. If you tell them stories about Pinocchio, they'll just become ordinary children. But if you tell them stories about Krishna, then they become Krishna Bhakta. Other questions?
I've heard it said that in the course of interacting with non-devotees, one shouldn't develop any type of emotional attachment. But I was wondering, it seems that over the course of the time, like say working closely with someone every day, it's difficult not to develop some type of some sentiment or some, you know, some care for them or something like that. So I guess how does one be in those situations really without getting too involved, like without showing some type of hostility?
There's a story about there was a crocodile or alligator, and he told the monkey, saw a monkey on the shore, and he said, come on to my back, I'll take you to my home and my wife will prepare some nice food for you. So the monkey agreed, so he jumped on the back and they were going over the river, and then now the alligator said, now I'm going to eat you. This was just a trick. Now I'm going to eat you. And the monkey said, I'm going to eat you, eat your heart, everything. And the monkey said, oh, you want my heart, but I left my heart back in the tree. Let's go back and I'll get it, and then you can eat me. So the alligator agreed, took him back, and the monkey escaped. So the point of the story is, you can associate, but don't give your heart. So if you make some friendship, that's okay, but don't give your heart. Don't sell yourself away. Don't forget Krishna. Don't forget your principles. If you forget your principles just to make a friendship, then what kind of friendship is that? So there's no harm in having, because if you're acting as their guru, they may see you as a friend, but you're actually their guru because you're giving them Krishna consciousness little by little. May not be directly. You cannot maybe always talk about Krishna, but a little by little, and because you're a devotee, and if they like you, then it means they like Krishna a little bit. How can you like Krishna's devotee without liking Krishna? So as long as you remember who you are and remember what your principles are, then it's okay. Then those friendships will actually be beneficial for everyone. But if in the course of being a friend, and then the friend says, hey, come on, let's go have a drink, you know, you say, oh, I shouldn't do this. You know, you say, come on, you're my friend. Oh, yeah, you're right, I'm your friend, let's have a drink. No, you have to remember, I'm your friend, provided the friendship is Krishna conscious, provided the relationship is favorable for devotional service. If it becomes unfavorable, then I have to reject it. Just like Sita. Sita was, you know, the wife of Lord Ramachandra. So Ram and Lakshman went away looking for a deer, and she was left there alone. And Ravana came, but he dressed himself, he disguised himself as a saintly person, as a sadhu. So her duty was to serve sadhus. She was a Kshatriya princess. She knew, I have to serve the sadhu, the saintly person. So she offered him, please, can I give you, have a seat, let me prepare some food for you. And she was serving him very nicely until he revealed himself. I'm Ravana. And when he revealed himself, then she rejected him completely. So if he's actually your friend as Ravana, if he reveals himself, then you have to reject. But otherwise, if he's an innocent person and he's learning about Krishna, that's okay. It may take a long time. We're not impatient. We know that not everyone can surrender to Krishna right away. It may take many years or many lifetimes, but at least we try to help them. That's our duty.
Another question. At what point should we take someone's joking as offense?
Joking about Krishna. Well, when you feel it, when you feel that it's getting too far, then you have to explain to them in a nice way, or however you have to deal with it. When it starts to, that's too much, then you explain, please don't take any, I don't want you to take any offense, but please don't speak like that, because it's... But sometimes people just speak in their vernacular. I remember once there was a new person, new devotee, and he was speaking about some other devotees, and he was using his own vernacular form of language, which included, many, words that are obscene. Yeah, obscene words. But he didn't mean it in an obscene way. That was just the way he spoke. So then that can be tolerated for a while. You may have to, in the right time and circumstance, explain. But at that time, I could understand he didn't mean any harm. He was just accustomed to speaking that way. The blankety 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 blank, But that's all right, because he's not trained. If we want everyone to be perfectly trained before we accept them, then it'll be difficult, because they're coming from the material world. So our duty is to train everybody in Krishna consciousness. So you train your friend gradually. Maybe don't mention it right at that time. Maybe wait till another time. Have an ishtagosti like we do. Every Sunday we have an ishtagosti. We bring up points. By bringing them up in a neutral time, not right at the time when the infraction takes place, it makes it easier for the persons to accept them. If you bring it up, you say, at a different time, let's say. You say, by the way, would you mind if we had a little talk about something? Now, it has nothing to do with what he did today. Maybe it was, a few weeks ago. You say, I would like to mention a little something about, the way we speak about Krishna or Krishna consciousness. So now he's fresh. He's not taking it personally. You'll be able to speak philosophically and might be able to help him. If he's sincere, if he's at least innocent, he'll take it. If he didn't have any intention of being offensive, then he'll take the instruction. Okay, so thank you very much for your kind attention. Now we're going to have the aarti ceremony, then the feast. We ask everyone to stand for aarti. Hare Krishna.